नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 14 टेक्स्ट 54। अहो विधातस्त्वम् अतीव बालिशो यस्त्वमात्मसृष्टि अप्रतिरूपमीहसे। परेनु जीवति अपरस्य या मृतिर् विपर्ययश्चेत्त्वमसि ध्रुवः परः। अहो विधातस्त्वम् अतीव बालिशो यस्त्व आत्मसृष्टि अपरतिरूपमीहसे। परेनु जीवति अपरस्य या मृतिर् विपर्ययश्चेत्त्वमसि ध्रुवः परः। We'll have one Prabhu and one Mataji read, so go ahead. अहो विधातस्त्वम् अतीव बालिशो यस्त्वमात्मसृष्टि अप्रतिरूपमीहसे। परेनु जीवति अपरस्य या मृतिर् विपर्ययश्चेत्त्वमसि ध्रुवः परः। अहो विधातस्त्वमतीव बालिशो यस्त्वमात्मसृष्टि प्रतिरूपमीहसे। परेनु जीवति अपरस्य या मृतिर् विपर्ययश्चेत्त्वमसि ध्रुवः परः। Aho, alas, in great lamentation. Vidhataha, O Providence, Tvam, you, Ativa, very much, Balishaha, inexperience, Yaha, who, Tu, indeed, Atmasrushti, of your own creation, apratirupam, just the opposite, ihase, you are performing and desiring, pare, while the father or the elder, nu, indeed, jivati, is living, aparasya, of one who was born later, Ya, which, mṛtihi, death, viparyayaha, contradictory, chet, if, tvam, you, asi, are, dhruvaha, indeed, paraha, an enemy. So, to lead up to this verse, yesterday there was text 40. I'm going to read from 41. There are no purports in between. So this verse will make sense why King Chitraketu and his wives, or especially the wife, the eldest wife, Kritadyuti, they're speaking in such a terrible way. They're almost chastising the Lord. So text 41. Even maid servants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maid servants of the maid servant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritadyuti's opulence in possessing a son, Kritadyuti's co-wives, always burned in envy, became extremely strong. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Kritadyuti walked within the house, thinking that her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand that he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritadyuti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child, who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upward. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maid servant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. O King Parikshit, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also cried. The queens who had administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire, and as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned brahmanas present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king breathed heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful, and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu, merged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers, and all the brahmanas. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell, and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the color rim on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkuma powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a kurari bird. Now text 54. Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation, for during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of the living entities and are never merciful. Purport. This is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked because some people are happy and some are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. Following the creative laws, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of providence, then providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. Actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruitive activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshutarine Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Very interesting story, huh? The queens, the 9,999,999, all became envious of the oldest queen or the senior queen, Kritadyuti, because she bore a son. And these queens, they became envious because they felt neglected by King Chitraketu. Chitraketu became absorbed in the happiness of having a son, so much so that he pampered his son and Kritadyuti like anything. He'd spent all his time with them. And he showered all favors upon Kritadyuti. So naturally, the other queens felt neglected. And instead of participating in King Chitraketu's joy, they became angry, envious, disillusioned. And they are lamenting. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. When we are asked again and again to consider ourselves to be in the most fortunate position if we are the servant of the servant. In fact, the more removed we are from Krishna by being a servant of the servant of the servant, the more attractive we become to Krishna. Because the nature of love is such that love is expressed to all those connected to the object of love, not exclusively only to that object of love. Of course, it is love for that object. So love for Krishna manifests as love for all of Krishna's parts and parcels. And wanting all of his parts and parcels to be the closer to Krishna is the nature of love. Because in that love there is a lot of security. In that love there is full confidence. But love, or so-called love, that is insecure, the person wants to be the center of that relationship. So these queens, they were struggling with envy. Oh, we are servants of Kritadyuti. What's the point here? We don't want to be servant of the servant. That's very unfortunate. When there is envy, it manifests as competition. When we are competing, I don't say we, whenever, let's say devotees or two persons are competing, with each other, that competition is from envy. And there is spiritual competition, Prabhupada describes. When there was book distribution happening in one place, Prabhupada would incite some competition among the devotees. And he would say, whichever temple distributes the most books, I will come there. And the devotees would be in a frenzy to just outsmart their fellow devotees from another temple just to get Prabhupada to visit. Now that competition is different. Prabhupada said that spiritual competition and material competition work very differently. In material competition, one is trying very hard to be ahead of others. In spiritual competition, there are two things. One is trying to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure in better and more unique, inspired ways, taking inspiration from their, I guess, fellow devotees. Oh, they served Krishna so nicely. Very nice. We should also serve Krishna nicely. And another feature of spiritual competition, which defies logic a little bit, is that each person or each devotee is trying very hard to make the other devotee be ahead. So among devotees, there's competition of glorification. Oh, no, no, you're such a nice devotee. No, 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 you are such a nice devotee. No, no, I may be like this, but actually you are such an amazing devotee. That's the competition. Krishna likes that kind of competition, where the other devotee is placed ahead. We try in every different way to place other devotees ahead of us. No, no, you please first. No, please. No, 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 you should. It's pleasing. It's joyful. Versus the material competition, just the whole system of education. Of course, I want to go in that direction now. But the whole system of education, of grading and ranking, it is the whole idea is it incites or it comes from a place of envy. So these queens are feeling like, and envy then transforms into things or features and qualities that actually want to bring a person down. The more the person falls, the happier they become. The other persons. So we have examples. Ramchandra Khan. He just could not tolerate the popularity of Haridas Thakur. So from morning till night, his consciousness was absorbed in how to bring about a downfall of Haridas Thakur. That is the nature of envy. It covers every moment of our conscious awake time in how to destroy the other person, how to get ahead. He tried and thought about different ways, and Haridas Thakur, because he's adosha means has no faults, how can you bring him down? Right? It is described that when there are two competing parties, each party is trying to understand the weakness of the other party. And they capitalize on that weakness. Either it's a game of whatever, soccer, or two lawyers competing with each other, or two companies competing with each other. They're always looking for the weakness in the other person, or the other party, and they capitalize on that weakness. But what weakness did Haridas Thakur have? Is adosha. There's absolutely no weakness of any kind. So Ramchandra Khan tried and thought and said, I know. For a person who claims to be a saint, the greatest downfall would be associating with a woman. I know. And he has a lot of historical evidence that in the lives of great personalities, when there was the participation or the intervention of women, then their minds got disturbed. So then Ramchandra Khan employed Lakshahira. Hey, you should go.
dressed very nicely with all perfumes. You scent yourself really well. Wear dress in a way that it is very alluring. And don't go at 12 o'clock in the afternoon. It doesn't work. Go at the dead of night, because the environment, the ether will also help you. And you should go. And she entered Haridas Thakur's hut, which was a very small place. It was not like, 4,000 square feet hut, four bedrooms and backyard. It was not like that. It was a very, very small, enough for one person to sit in. She entered that place. So it's a very crammed place. Such close proximity with Lakshahira. And she had chewed paan and the lips were all red. Her eyes were all decorated with mascara. And then she was wearing dress that was falling off her body. And she was smelling all these. And she says, Haridas, in a sweet voice. And Haridas Thakur simply said, I haven't... This is where not finishing rounds always helps. Usually it doesn't help, because you ask any devotee, Prabhu, can you do some... Prabhu, I haven't finished my rounds. If we ever are accosted like that, and we can say, I haven't finished my rounds, that would be the greatest success. Haridas Thakur said, oh, I don't mind, but I haven't finished my rounds. After I finish my rounds, I will fulfill your desires. Thing is, Haridas Thakur never finished his rounds, because 64 times 3, it would take away 24 hours of his time. And by the time he finished his rounds, the next day's quota would begin. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So he chanted through the night, and she was there, all dressed up to entice him. But she was hearing him chant, and the story goes, she came three nights, and all three nights he was chanting, and she transformed. Her envy transformed into love for Krishna, just in three nights. Oh, that's fantastic. What powerful association of Haridas Thakur. So envy is such that it waits, it harbors on bringing another person down, like anything. Right, whenever we speak of envy, Prahlad likes this story. There was a man who was, a man was transporting a bunch of monkeys from one place to another place. And he had them in a cage, and the top of the cage was completely open. So, monkeys are restless, they won't stay in one place. So his friend said, how can you transport these monkeys? They will run away. He said, no, don't worry. They're Indian monkeys. Or whatever you want to, whichever group you want to pick on. I'll pick on the Indians. The Indian monkeys. Even if one tries to escape, the others will pull him down. So they will all stay. No one will go. Is that the nature of envy? So the queens, they became very envious. And one of the things it says that envy, it covers our intelligence. It covers our discriminating power as to what is good, what is not good. What are the consequences of an act that we are about to do? It covers it to such a degree that these queens who wanted the attention of Chitraketu did something so gratefully obnoxious that they administered poison to a little child. Killed him. Huh? Yes, 9,999,999 putanas. I administered poison, Jagadanda Prabhu was saying, putana. And finished him. And not only did they finish him, they also came to cry. They were all feigning sadness. Oh, little boy died. When they knew inside what they had done, it puts the whole drama. They were acting. When King Chitraketu and Kritiduti was very drastically lamenting, and it's described how they are lamenting. King Chitraketu fell unconscious. He couldn't walk. He was slipping, dropping on the floor. The queen's garland from her hair fell on the ground, hair completely scattered. When we say hair completely scattered, for us it's a common phenomenon, people around with scattered hair, you know, so it doesn't seem, so what's the problem here? She's the queen. Queens never come out in public if they're not prim and proper. They just don't, because no one wants to see the queen or king disheveled, you know, in his pajamas, you know, stuff hanging. Nobody wants it. They're always prim. So the hair scattered and all that means she didn't care how she was looking. There was not even a consideration. King Chitraketu just falling unconscious, crying piteously. And in her sadness, the part of sadness is that there is anger. That anger comes out as this verse. O Supreme Creator, O Providence, you are definitely heartless. You are inexperienced in creation. What is the inexperience? That your laws are messed up. If laws are all right, then those who are born first should die first. Those who are born later should die later. But your laws are messed up, that someone who's just born died in the presence of their father. This is not right. You have caused, and now this is a direct accusation, you have caused the death of the son. Like Krishna is sitting there, finish this. It's not like that. But the accusation is such. And it says, if you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of the living entities and are never merciful. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Suhrudam sarva bhutanam. I am the dearmost friend of all living entities. And Kritaditi says, you are not a friend at all. You are an enemy of the living entities. And you are never merciful. When Krishna, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, explains how his mercy manifests in the lives of people and devotees. Tesham evanu kampartham, etc. There are many verses describe Krishna's mercy. Sambhavami atma mayaya. In that verse, atma maya, Prabhupada translates his own internal potency or causeless mercy. So Krishna is all merciful at all times. It's not like only on Sundays he's merciful, or once in a while he takes vacation from mercy and says, hey, today I don't feel like it. Nothing like that. Always merciful. And always a friend of the living entity. The issue is in the vision of the person. They don't see it. And because their vision is such, they feel that Krishna is not merciful. Because they don't know how to access that love of Krishna. Another thing is, a person accepts Krishna's love or mercy only when it seems favorable for their material condition. Then they say, oh yeah, I like this. This is because of the mind. The mind keeps telling us, you like this, you don't like this. So if you get what you like, very nice. You're very merciful. And if you get something you don't like, why are you like this? Why are you not a friend? So Prabhupada writes, this is the way a conditioned soul condemns the creator when he meets reverses. Because nobody likes reversals. They always like two things. And both are the same things actually. One, they like always sense gratification. And they don't like any resistance or inhibition or impediments in that sense gratification. As long as that continues, God is very merciful. Any impediment, what's wrong with him? I thought he was very merciful. Why are you being like that to me? I chant all my mantras, I do all my prayers, I give my donation. I also do some service. Why are you like this to me? I thought you were all merciful. You're not merciful at all. Because there is the reverse. There is an obstruction in sense gratification. In fact, obstructing sense gratification is greater mercy. But that's too difficult for a person to accept. So in this sadness, her anger manifests in such a way that she cannot see Krishna's love. So, in general, when we are angry at something or at someone, it's an indicator that behind that anger, there is some sadness. Sadness comes from unfulfilled expectations. Regardless that we are carrying very unrealistic expectations. That may be a whole different topic. But there are expectations, and those expectations, when not met, bring about sadness. And the usual expression of that sadness is anger. And the expectation, or the very base of that expectation, is a sense of not feeling loved. Originally, not feeling loved by Krishna. But even in the materialistic or within the material paradigm, when a person doesn't feel loved, that translates as sadness, which translates as anger. And different degrees of it. So they are not feeling. Krita-dyuti cannot see Krishna's love. She feels Krishna is heartless to have killed her son, who's young and innocent. What did he do to you? Why are you so cruel? Because ignorance is such, here Prabhupada writes, he does not know how the subtle laws of fruitive activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ignorance is compared to darkness. Maya haya andhakara. So darkness is such that those objects that exist cannot be seen. In a dark room, we can't see anything. We can't discern. As soon as we turn on the light, everything is clear. So in darkness, all a person can do is grope something and try to figure out and try to maneuver through the dark place. And we all know, however grown up we might be, when it is dark, what's one feeling that manifests? Who said? Fear, yes. Maybe a dark room, a dark alley, a dark forest, whatever. If it is dark, it is fearful. So when we are in ignorance, we cannot run away from fear. It is always there. It's a characteristic of darkness. Because light removes fear. Darkness brings fear. So when we are acting in ignorance, one of the ignorances is now not so much darkness, but the ignorance is we get attached to things in this material world. We get attached to things means we get attached to things and people in a materialistic way. What is the attachment in a materialistic way? What does that mean? It means I'm expecting something from someone else. I'm expecting from something. What am I expecting? Put bluntly, sense gratification. Even if it is nicely said, it is still sense gratification. I want others and I want other things to make me feel good. And as long as they make me feel good, however that is, that's great. This is darkness. And therefore we become attached to our own, what we call, feeling good, which is sense gratification. And therefore there is always the fear that it will go away. Or if it is about to go away, it brings fear. Attachment brings fear always, because the fear of losing it by which we are getting sense gratification. Of course, in this case, the loss has already happened, so that fear is manifested as anger. As long as it is there, one is fearful that it will go away, and after it goes, there's anger. Isn't it? Bhagavad Gita describes it. Sangat sanjayate kama, kamat krodho vijayate. These principles in Bhagavad Gita are fantastic, the way Krishna has described it. We see it again and again and again and again manifest. As soon as an expectation is thwarted, anger manifests. So the only option to circumvent all this, to not be affected by this, is to develop enlightened consciousness, or to be in light, so you can see things as they are, as it is said. Or to see things as they are means to not have unrealistic expectations of things or of others. As soon as we impose an unrealistic expectation, we're heading into darkness. Now, is there a realistic expectation then? We could say yes. Realistic would be to know and understand our limitations and someone else's limitations. And really look for everything in relation to Krishna. Now, others also have the capacity to love and be loved. There's no doubt about it. But that should be realistic. How much, what is the capacity of the person to express love and receive love? If that understanding is clear, then one's not disappointed, upset, angry, sad, betrayed. Oh, that's my capacity, that's their capacity. And within the boundaries of that, there is exchange. So there is no disappointment. We should have some realistic understandings of how the world operates, how the laws of nature operate, how the modes of nature operate. If we are aware of these things, then we don't become unnecessarily entangled in the whole, oh, I thought it was like that, now it has become like this. Then fear, anger, and all these things will come. And they will manifest such that here they're accusing, she's accusing, Kritadyuti. She sounds like a sweet kurari bird, but in that sweet voice, she's accusing, condemning providence and Krishna. Oh, heartless, merciless, enemy of the living entity. How can you be like that? So, any questions, comments? Jeremy?
So we're encouraged to be in this mood of the servants of the servants of the servants.
Yes.
I can't help but once, and you said that we're more attractive the further along in the chain we are, more attractive we are to Krishna.
Yeah, it defies logic, doesn't it?
Yes, but Krishna is so attractive that I want to be the closest to him. So yeah. I wonder how to get over this, or can you just speak on this a bit?
Krishna is very attractive. And he becomes even more attractive when we are serving his servants. That's just the nature of Krishna. For a person who wants to rush ahead of everyone else because Krishna is the most attractive, behind that is, I'm also very attractive, Krishna, look at me. And Krishna is attracted by, we hear in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna, the word Krishna means all attractive. When he is all attractive, it also means that he's not attracted by anything else. You understand? For example, if a person is very rich, suppose he's a billionaire, and I come and show a billionaire, hey, I have $100 bill here. You probably won't even pay attention. Because I can't attract someone else when they already have money, which is very attractive. Correct? Or beauty, whatever. They're not attracted by it. So Krishna is not attracted by anything because he's the source of everything. However, he's attracted by Srimati Radharani. She is called Madan Mohan Mohini. That she bewilders the person who bewilders even Cupid. So what is it about her that bewilders Krishna or attracts Krishna? That she thinks of herself as the servant of the servant of the servant. She wants others to come close to Krishna. And that is very attracting to Krishna, that he wants to be with her. Also, we should understand that Krishna is not limited, that because he is giving mercy to some persons way up in the line, that I will not get his mercy. And in many, many pastimes, Krishna defies that. And when before Lord Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys, it's described. Dinabandhu Prabhu describes in a very nice way. There were 8 boys sitting around Krishna. And behind those 8 were 16, behind the 16 were 32, behind that were 64. He says like this, there were 1 megabytes and megabytes of devotees, boys sitting in big concentric circles. And they were not like 10, 15 boys. Krishna went out with hundreds and thousands of cows and calves and hundreds of boys, thousands of boys every day. And when they sat down for lunch, they would sit like this. And each boy felt that Krishna was holding his lunch, looking at him exclusively. They thought, Krishna's looking at me. This Prabhu was be sitting in, 50th concentric circle far somewhere. But Krishna's looking at me only. Everyone felt like that. Krishna's looking at me, sharing his lunch with me. And when he was doing the rasa dance, same. So many circles of gopis and Krishna was right between 2 gopis. They all felt, Krishna's dancing with me only exclusively, looking at me. Krishna is in Dwaraka with 16,108 queens. Simultaneously in all the palaces at the same time. No queen felt, oh, today Krishna hasn't come, must be with Rukmini or Satyabhama. He was there with all of them simultaneously. In fact, it's even more bewildering because in each palace, Krishna was doing different things. In one palace, he was just waking up. In another palace, he was doing evening arati. In another palace, he was playing with his children. Some other, Narada Muni goes from one to another. He sees Krishna doing different things. So Krishna is very attracting and attracted by that mood. That because it's free of envy, that let others get Krishna's mercy.
So, is the motivation that I'm talking about, wanting to be the closest to Krishna, is that also an envy of Radharani?
Because she's not so necessarily. Because I don't know. I don't know what the deep down inside.
Or an envy of his spiritual nature, I guess. Also,
at least on the conscious level, we don't think so. But we can say that the very fact that we are in the material world means that we are embodiments of envy. So it's there. There's no denying of it. But the more we relish the pastimes of Krishna with his devotees, we become free of that envy. We call nirmatsaranam. Bhagavata means in relation to Krishna. So the more we have taste for Bhagavata, we become free of that envy. Krishna will pay attention. He's always paying attention to us. It doesn't matter where we are. The only problem is we are not paying attention to Krishna. He's paying attention. So we want to attract Krishna. That's our goal, correct? Yes, wonderful. Then we should know what attracts Krishna's attention. If we think this will attract his attention, it may not. You had something to say about rasa dance? Jagadanda Prabhu and then Hemangi. You want to add? Sure. I can't see Prabhu.
Krishna. Yeah. Thank you for the nice question and your beautiful answer. We're just trying to, like, the examples that you gave, the concentric circles, that's very helpful. Another example also comes to mind is disciplic succession. So where Krishna, he's there in a way, you know, very far removed, so-called far removed, you know. But then Krishna is, he's transparently present through each of those representatives in the parampara. And in a way, why is it, I guess, more attractive to be further removed? So not only are we getting the love of Krishna, but then each of the representatives in the line, their love for Krishna is also added basically further on. That's one example. Another example that is given typically, like in a family, it is mentioned that the children that come later, like in a big family, so they not only receive the love of the parents, but they also receive the love and affection of the siblings as well. So anyway, the youngest, you know, he sees, oh, I'm far removed from the father, but then, or mother, but then he receives actually more from, he receives not only from the parents, but also from the elder siblings. So those are principles that I see. And also, as you're saying, our conception of closeness mostly has to do with physical closeness. That's how we relate, you know, intimacy or closeness with. But you know, there are other ways of being intimate. And you know, this is what we're talking about basically. And Krishna can simultaneously be very far and very near. So yes, fantastic. And as you expressed and as Prabhu expressed, yet somewhere it is a reflection of our situation in this material world that we are projecting into the spiritual arena, basically. The details may vary. That's what it is. Envy is a strong word, but some insecurity, some something there. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hey, Monkey. On this point? Or your... Okay, Hemant is
I like the way you said realistic expectation means understanding one's own limitation and others' limitation. Is that what you said?
Seeing others in their proper place of strength and weakness together.
So my question is that... I may have a realistic understanding of my limitations, but it's also said that in devotional life, Krishna gives you services and also empowers you to do the service. But very often I see that, and it's also said that the moment you come to, you know, a level of, you know, able to do a particular service, you know, suddenly the service grows. So it seems like it's a constant overwhelming feeling. And that sometimes does bring about a lot of sadness and also sometimes anger, because it's like constant. Maybe it's the material energy. There's always, there's so much passion and there's so much, like, you know, need to do, need to do, need to do. Even in devotional practices, it sometimes feels the same. It's almost like even when you take pause, it doesn't feel like you're taking a pause. It's like there's an overwhelming feeling which leads to sadness, which leads to anger. So how do you address that, even though you're doing, trying to do, it's mixed devotion, I know that.
Yes, but. Okay. Thank you for helping me. The said very simply, we are considered to be marginal energy of Krishna. Marginal means
that we can orient ourselves towards the material energy, or we can orient ourselves towards Krishna. And interestingly, we are constantly, as I say, flip-flopping from one position to another. And so as Krishna wants to increase our service and then increase our capacity, always falling short of the actual needed, because he wants the devotees to turn to him to say, help me, I need your mercy, without which I cannot do anything. That is very pleasing to Krishna. And he always makes sure that his devotees are in such a condition that they will look up to him. Now, those who do, they feel Krishna's support manifest in different ways. One should be open to that. Once we say, Krishna, help me, then we should be open to that. When our attention turns from Krishna, then these things look very big. And when they're very big, naturally one is overwhelmed. In the Panchatantra, there's a story. Vishnu Sharma, who was the teacher for the prince, he gave them a stick. It was this long. And he said, now you make this stick shorter without breaking it or altering it in any way. You have to make this stick shorter. So the person looked at it, tried many ways. He said, what to do? But what's the answer? How do you make this stick shorter? No bending it. You bring a longer stick and put it next to it. This becomes shorter. Right? You bring a longer stick. So whatever looks big and overwhelming, when you place it in relation to Krishna, it's very tiny. So where's our whole thing is to bring our attention to Krishna again and again and again. That's the whole thing. Without which everything is overwhelming. Everything. In fact, just to get up and end the day is overwhelming. Now, not just speaking as a devotee, as anyone. It's very overwhelming. Too big. Everything, the material energy has the capacity to explode and magnify everything to such a degree that they all are very big. This is something I've been thinking, we've been talking about it for a long time. It looks very big. Everything looks very big. When in relation to Krishna, then those things look small. Idea is to bring Krishna in the picture. My dear Krishna, this is too big for me. Help me. That's the practice of a devotee. And the more we try, the more we practice, these things start looking in context to that. The tendency is to turn. You want to say something? Justin. Jai Balde. Part of Jeremy's question.
I remember Jai talking about the Raganuga Bhakti Marg and developing loba, which is greed, right? Mm-hmm. So how does that manifest if you're always trying to put other people...
That is the greed.
That's greed, the greed?
To put others in a way that is pleasing to Krishna.
So, okay, because I was understanding it like thinking like, oh, wanting to be close to Krishna, like...
Yeah, that is how you become closer to Krishna.
It's just counterintuitive, I guess.
Yes. It is counterintuitive to the lobha that we have now in the materialistic way. That greed is me first.
Right.
And we have to develop that greed that others first. Oh, let others be first. I'm greedy to keep others first. Because that is what is pleasing to Krishna. In the first one, the materialistic lobha, that is what is pleasing to me. And the latter, that is what is pleasing to Krishna. Krishna wants to see us free of envy. So the more we want to love Krishna, it means that Krishna do what Krishna likes. He likes for us to put others ahead of us. You see, in the lives of anyone great, they always have the ability to glorify others. Oh, you are very amazing. Without, you know, forget about this tradition, that tradition, doesn't matter. Regardless of tradition, of course Vaishnavas, they will always place someone else greater. It's just the nature of freedom from envy. To become greedy, to become free of envy, that's fantastic. Yes, Jagdanpur wants to add.
Krishna, yeah, like Prabhu gave a beautiful answer. And also one other point, like as you were mentioning, the sense of always trying to, like a cat and a mouse game, trying to catch. And then, you know, and as Prabhu was sharing, if it is spiritual, then it will push us towards Krishna. It will not lead to, you know, exasperation and desperation. But if you are getting overwhelmed and, you know, there is, you know, anger or frustration, referring to what I spoke yesterday, many times, most of the time, there are some sentences that are running in our, you know, from where we come from. Like one sentence possibly could be, no matter how much I do is enough, you know, or I'm not good enough. So if those are the things that we bring, you know, into the realms of devotional service, and then we try to do enough, where devotional service is ever expanding, I mean, it's a losing proposition. So we have to be aware of, you know, those things, and, you know, and then, as Prabhu was saying, bring, you know, turn towards Krishna. That's also a practical thing that happens, speaking from experience. And then to add to what Prabhu was saying, the whole spiritual paradigm is about abundance. I mean, there is enough for everybody. I mean, we are not used to that principle in this, especially in this material world. It's like the other day Daita Prabhu was speaking, you know, last week, you know, this, you know, me and mine, and then, you know, the predator mentality. If somebody has, that means I will not have. But the spiritual paradigm is abundance, you know. It is enough for everybody and more. So then there will be not sort of, you know, scrounging for it.
Thank you. I want to go back to Himangi's point or question. Your thoughts led to more. That while we spoke about the orientation of our consciousness, on a practical level, it's quite all right to reassess. Sometimes, in the name of service, we may have signed up for far more than we really can handle. That is also possible. So it's good to reassess realistically what is it that I can handle and what I cannot handle. There's nothing wrong with that. That's okay to do as well. Because otherwise it's not like in the name of service, everything that piles upon the head is all wonderful service. We may not. We may have accepted far beyond our, as they say, we may have bitten more than we could chew. So to know how much we can bite is also good.
Yeah. So so what are you saying? If our survival depends on saying yes to everything, and from that place, if we come into devotional service, you know, we will say yes to everybody, and we'll get crushed. So being aware of, you know, all those things is very important.
Because I like Ramayana. When Hanuman, Angada, Jambavan, they all came to Rameshwaram and they had to jump. There was a 100 yojanas away, Lanka. they all assessed. They all want to serve Lord Ramachandra. And the glory of finding Sita was fantastic. But they all said, well, I can only jump so much. Jambavan said, I can jump 100 yojanas, but I cannot jump back. Only Hanuman can do it. So then that environment was free of envy, in the sense that they knew their capacities, but the focus was finding Sita for Lord Ramachandra's pleasure. That was more important, not who was the hero. And they knew, oh, Hanuman has the strength, you should do it. Because we want Lord Ramachandra to be pleased, not that I want to be the hero. This is my capacity. I can jump so much, I can jump so much, I cannot come back. But you can do it. And their service was to remind Hanuman. Side story was, Hanuman was cursed to forget all his strength. So their service was to bring him his memory back of what his capacity is, so he can jump and come back and find Sita Devi. You had something?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for a nice class. So, so it appears that King Chitraketu's wife, I don't remember her name.
Kritadyuti.
So it appears that her, you know, accusation against the Lord, you know, is something that, you know, it's kind of like the foundation of atheism. You know, the foundation of atheism, sometimes we all, when anyone has reverses, it's like, it's the Lord's fault. And when, you know, something's good happened in our life, then I did it, usually is the case. So it doesn't matter, regardless, everyone goes through reverses.
Well, atheism is worse than this, because here they're at least recognizing that there is providence. Atheism is worse than this, because they say, well, what providence? No God.
So my question is that in Lord Chaitanya Shishashakam prayers, the last verse, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and he should remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything he wants, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So my question is, what stage of devotional service can this be categorized? Because it appears that the first verse, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, is kind of like an Artanabriti program or a Sadhanabhati program. And is there any particular reason why this verse is the last verse in the Shishashaka prayers?
It is described that this verse is a Prema Bhakti verse. It is the stage of unconditional love. It's Prema Bhakti. Now, can we apply this verse, although we are in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, perhaps in Adav Shraddha or Bhajana Kriya stage? Is that verse applicable to us? Yes, it is applicable to us, because Sadhana Bhakti is also pure devotional service. It's applicable to us in a different way. We may not be able to have full realization that, my dear Krishna, you may crush me and make me brokenhearted. If he touches us, we might cry, hey, foul, what are you doing? But it's a verse of commitment. So our level of commitment to Krishna at our stage of sadhana is what Krishna's, we can apply this verse as. But my commitment is, okay, whatever happens, I'm not leaving you right now. I'll sort it out, I'll whine and all that, but I'm not leaving you. Because after lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, I've made it here. I'm not leaving. Whatever circumstances manifest, I'm not leaving. That's the commitment of that verse for us. For someone, as they develop that attachment to Krishna in a greater way, this verse will have different meanings to it, or different intensity to it. But that's the verse of unconditional love. It's Prema Bhakti verse. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. This Sunday is the disappearance day of Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So we will have Pushpanjali program, etc. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So Sunday, 10:30 in the morning. Hare Krishna. Sunday.
Such an